Last week, London-based firm NetNames released a report called Sizing the Piracy Universe. The report, authored by Dr. David Price, indicates that online piracy of entertainment media has continued to increase even as legal and affordable alternatives have become more widely available. Dr. Price is the Director of Piracy and Counterfeit Analysis at NetNames, and he was kind enough to grant me an interview this week. We spoke about a wide range of subjects related to media consumption in general, piracy, and where all of this might be heading. I reached him via Skype in Cambridge, England.
And I'll jump right in and ask you personally about your background, your qualifications, how it is you came to be doing this kind of research.
Sure. I've always had a significant interest in computing and the internet. I can remember using NCSA Mosaic way back when, and that launched in whatever it was, 1993 or something, and was always a very strong user of anything technological. My academic studies went in a completely the different direction. I ended up doing some postgraduate work in criminology, and then ended up in a role as a research consultant at an internet monitoring and internet consultancy named Envisional. This was about 12 or so years ago. And one of Envisional's focuses was on digital piracy, which was always a topic that, of great interest to me. And I've ended up specializing in this area. I founded the piracy analysis team here a few years after I got to Envisional. We've been through a couple of name changes since then, and we're now currently known as NetNames. We're part of a much bigger group of about 400 or so people worldwide. We call ourselves a digital brand protection company at the moment. We work for corporates providing domain name protection. And my particular interest is in the piracy and counterfeit analysis side. So we work for major content owners and major rights holders, giving them an idea about what's going on online with regard to digital piracy and hard goods counterfeiting and what the landscape looks like. And the report we published, Sizing the Piracy Universe, is a fairly good example, quite a wide-ranging example of the kind of analysis and work which we can put together for people.
What is it about the subjects of piracy and counterfeiting that interest you personally, and why is that not just you trying to destroy tech, Dr. Price?
That's a very good question.
As I understand that that's what you're about.
I'm certainly trying to. It's our role to make the internet behave. Really, the interest is that this is it's a fascinating area in a number of ways. One, because it is constantly changing. I can remember seeing Napster in 1999. I can remember the legal battles surrounding it. I can remember the plethora of Napster clones that appeared afterwards. We had Kazaa and Morpheus and various others. I can distinctly remember the exact moment I first tried BitTorrent, and my jaw dropped at how stunningly good this was at being a content transmission system, and how it was. I remember sending an email around to the rest of the company saying, I have seen the future, and its name is BitTorrent. And this was, 2002, 2003, so sometime before it really hit the public consciousness. But the interest in how technology works and how technology can facilitate the distribution of material and the distribution of information has to be twinned with the knowledge of how important it is for content owners and content creators to be able to exist within this world. And we saw this very early on with the music industry, who I think probably would acknowledge through and through that they made a number of very poor steps early on. But we've seen that, the music industry has been affected from top to bottom by the internet and by the technology which now exists. There isn't a single part of the music industry which hasn't been strongly and badly affected by the internet and by the technological tools for sharing and discovering and distributing new music and loved music. And so What my particular interest is in working out where these two very strong and very important impulses, the raison d'etre of the internet to put content into people's hands as quickly and efficiently as possible, against the people who are making that content making sure that they are properly rewarded, that they have business models that they can use, trust, and that the content keeps flowing in a way. You know, the internet has shown that it's great for making all kinds of different material. And you only have to look at some of the fantastic stuff on somewhere like YouTube to understand that. But there's also the need for all of the people who are making this content to be in a situation where they can feel that they can trust the internet and that this is an opportunity for them, not just a problem.
Well, and it's interesting. I'm glad you went there because, I mean, this is sort of a chronic, recurring theme, if you will, in the antagonistic side of this debate. This answer is almost always the same. Piracy just represents convenience. As you said, almost, it represents the future, and the market is simply patiently or impatiently waiting for the industry to get a clue, to understand that this is just about convenience and a way to deliver the content the right way. And as soon as it does, this whole piracy thing will simply evaporate as a quote problem, you know, and P2P will be the model, and it'll all be fine. First of all, do you agree? Second of all, what do you say to that general attitude?
I think there's certainly something to it. You know, what piracy has demonstrated is the simple demand people have for convenient and all-encompassing delivery solutions of great content. That there's no doubt that there is a huge unmet demand online for material. Well, unmet is probably the wrong word now. 5 years ago, it may have been. Now I think it is a demand which is continually being met. And certainly in some countries like the United States, the market is adjusting very quickly, and you have some fantastic examples of delivery systems. Netflix, Hulu, Spotify, Pandora, Steam, you know, Kindle Books. It's not difficult to find your content legitimately in the United States. It's not particularly difficult to find it legitimately in the UK and in a lot of Western countries. So you move outside that area, it does become more difficult. But I think that there's the attitude that this will all go away, I think is still a little misguided. I mean, we see even with the ability to put content in people's hands in a simple manner, in a legitimate manner, which does ensure that the creators and the movie studios and the recording companies and the games makers make sure that they are all rewarded as they should be. Even with that, we still see piracy, and we still see piracy increasing. Now, that's one of the messages that we had within this report, which is that even if you do look at the experience of the United States, even though Netflix takes up more bandwidth than any other single protocol online, BitTorrent is still wildly popular, and it's still increasing. Over the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen more people infringing content in the United States, and the amount of content that they are infringing is increasing. So even with the great legitimate distribution systems we have, even with $10 a month for Netflix for the wealth of content that they offer, even with 99-cent MP3s on iTunes or free streaming through Spotify and Pandora and whatever else is out there, there's still a demand for pirated material, and there's still a demand for people to be able to access the material for free through whatever means that they have at their disposal.
And you probably don't look at these factors in your studies, although perhaps you do, or just anecdotally in your own personal experience. I'm assuming that a lot of it comes down to, you know, demographics and ethnographics, that you know, if you're 32 and under and have grown up with a certain set of habits, that the habits are there and the expectations are different. And that to a great extent, it's not just a financial one-to-one comparison. As you say, Netflix is extremely cheap. So you ask somebody, well, why pirate? You know, I can imagine a couple of answers. One is just plain habit. The other being that one of the recurring things that a lot of certainly younger people seem to do is, you know, they want access to things that are just barely released or not even released yet. You know, and whether it's a Hollywood big blockbuster movie, you know, they want to see it before it's ever even out in theaters, and invariably complain about it as well. do you look at any of those factors either officially in your studies or just personally in your own research?
Yeah, it's not something we included within this particular report, but it is something that we do focus on for a lot of our clients. And I think there's a number of good points in there. I mean, on the demographic side, certainly what we tend to see from survey results is that there is slightly higher rates of piracy within slightly lower socioeconomic groups. Ofcom in the UK released a very good survey a couple of weeks ago, which showed that downloading habits and infringement was higher as you went down the socioeconomic scale, which would, you know, make perfect sense. If you can't afford the latest CD or the latest DVD, maybe you can just head off and download it. Mm-hmm. I think what you having said that, though, you do still see significant rates of piracy within, you know, within every socioeconomic group. It's not just the poorer who are downloading. Same with demographics. Again, it's focused on the younger generation. It's focused on those who are very used to the internet and who have grown up obtaining content through the internet, and who don't necessarily see significant difference between grabbing a movie from iTunes, renting it from Blockbuster, if Blockbuster still exists, does in the UK to some extent, or downloading it from the Pirate Bay. I think for a lot of the younger generation, I've talked to people about this a lot, it's content is content is content, and where it comes from doesn't make so much difference to them. It's simply the fact that they can obtain it. I think one of the points you made there was very interesting about habits, and this is something which goes back to the question we just had a moment ago about what's going on and what will go on over the next few years. Which is that it is very, very easy to get used to using the internet and using sites to obtain content however you want to obtain it. And I think people have grown up pirating content. They don't necessarily feel that they're doing anything wrong. All their friends are doing it. They've never been told off for it. Maybe their school has lectured to them about it, but whoever listens to those kind of public safety announcements at school... exactly. You know, don't run across the road without looking twice. Don't pirate things on the internet. It's just in one ear and out the other.
Right.
And I think that's a big issue. As people do get older, they're used to this. They're used to using the internet, and it doesn't necessarily bring them. It doesn't necessarily provoke them into considering what they're doing. That they're simply following the same methods they've always done. And I think that may also be one of the reasons why, even as we push on and as things become more convenient to download and easier to download legitimately, there's still going to be people who push themselves over to other areas. As you say, maybe that's because of convenience. Maybe it's because they want a film before it's released wherever they are, or they want to be able to download something that's only in the theaters and hasn't been released on DVD yet, and they can't stream it from iTunes. So I think there are reasons in there why people are doing this beyond simple freedom and beyond simple the lack of cost. Right. I think there's a lot to it. And I really feel we're still scratching the surface of understanding exactly how the justifications people have filter through in their consciousness, in their conscience, to affecting their actions. We have relatively simple survey questions and answers about how people are acting, and, you know, tick a box if this is what you're doing. Mm. And I think I'd be fascinated to really dig into this in depth. My postgraduate work that I did many, many years ago was mostly very in-depth, long-form chats to people about their particular actions and why they acted in a certain way and how they did it. And you get so much more from those kinds of discussions than you do from simple survey techniques. Unfortunately, it takes a lot of time. It's not necessarily information that can be generalized as well as you'd want it to. And it's quite expensive to actually put together. I think it would be something very, very interesting, and it's something I'm always trying to convince people to get involved more deeply with, because I think there's a lot of answers there that might come out, and subtleties in why people act in certain ways that could really inform this major debate.
Before I leave this topic too far behind, I want to bring up a couple of blogs that were written on the Project Disco site, which is sort of the communications outreach of the CCIA, the Computer and Communications Industry Association, who are fundamentally lobbyists here in the U.S. for that industry.
Mm-hmm.
And most recently, one of their bloggers, Rob Pegoraro, I apologize to him if he hears it, Pegoraro, if I can't pronounce his name correctly. He doesn't, in this blog post, he doesn't criticize your findings or methodologies per se, which is not surprising because I think they're fairly tight and fairly rigorous, but does indicate that your report suggests that legal options are, in fact, already having a mitigating effect on piracy. In fact, most specifically, he points to he kind of plucks your paragraph from page 27 about bandwidth use and the fact that Netflix is the greatest demand in the U.S. And then uses that to sort of segue into this suggestion. Therefore, piracy is on the wane in the face of this. Has he got it right, or is he taking some data and sort of spinning it around a little bit?
I think there's certainly a bit to it. I mean, as we've been discussing, you throw really good, convenient options at people, and they will come to it and they will use it. But I think you're still seeing significant rates of infringement in North America. You're still seeing increases per person in the amount of infringement in North America. You know, there's really no question that, and there's an understanding throughout the content industry that the internet is the future for all of this distribution, that they see massive advantages to it, that they understand the power of having all their content online.
Absolutely.
And yet there are still barriers to getting it out there. There are syndication deals that are already in place, that there are making sure that you can negotiate with people in every single country that you want to get this material out to. You know, in the European Union at the moment, you've got to go to every single country and make your deals with every single broadcaster individually. And that's a nightmare. There's efforts going on in the EU now to try and simplify this and try and coordinate it so that there's almost a single market for entertainment content, just as there is a single market for many other areas. And yet, this is a very large bureaucracy and a very large intra-governmental operation, and you can imagine how slowly that can work. And so I think that there is an issue with ensuring that you can get this material out to people. And as you do, piracy will, you know, be affected. It's not going to go away. And the evidence we've got is that it doesn't decline. It possibly doesn't increase as fast as in other areas. But there's still a big impact. And I think one of the issues is, with using some of those stats from Netflix, is that you're talking, the proportion of bandwidth taken up by BitTorrent is lower in North America than it is in Europe and it is in Asia Pacific. But that still doesn't mean it's not a massive amount of content. Mm. And it still doesn't mean that it's not increasing as an absolute amount of petabytes. It is, and it's increasing significantly. It just happens that over the last 2 or 3 years, the amount of bandwidth taken up by Netflix has absolutely exploded.
Sure.
You know, it is so simple to use Netflix, and it's so simple to jump from one show to another show to a film to something else.
Right.
And people will sit there for 3 or 4 hours a night and just stream their content.
Sure.
And Netflix will provide that to you in as good a quality as your broadband connection will allow it. Whereas with BitTorrent, you download something in whatever quality you want, and it's downloaded and done, and you finish off, and then you might go off and download something else. Whereas Netflix, it's almost like constant streaming. Right. So I think there are some technical issues why Netflix is such a big bandwidth hog, but it also does affect the fact that BitTorrent will take up a smaller percentage of that pie. It's just that the pie itself has expanded dramatically over the last 2 or 3 years across the world, not just in North America.
Right. And the other implication in that blog post that actually raises a good question came up the other day and something else I was on is it doesn't surprise me at all that the majority of infringement you saw in your report really is about filmed entertainment much more than music. Mm-hmm. Today the music is actually, even though most of the conversation for the last 10 to 15 years has been about music, and in fact it continues to be about music, and much to my frustration, I'd like to see more filmmakers jump into the conversation, but you know, your report indicates very strongly that if memory serves, it's over 60% between television and motion picture of the content being consumed is filmed entertainment. And I'm wondering, and the implication from this blog post from Disco is that, well, of course that's true because there are simply more legal channels for music than there are for filmed entertainment right now. Is that, do you think, what it's about, or is it something else? You know, are there other factors in your opinion?
Sure, I think there's a number of reasons. The content analysis that we did on BitTorrent looked at the number of files available, and there's more films and television available. It's simply that there's a number of technical reasons why, and we were focused on very much the most popular content. So we're looking at on BitTorrent of the things that most people are downloading, and one of the reasons why there is more film and television in that is because the file sizes are larger. It takes you longer to download a file size, so you're present in the BitTorrent swarm for longer, which means that the numbers add up. So that in terms of the number of actual downloads, it may be that the latest Jay-Z album had as many downloads as Despicable Me 2. It's just that people aren't actually present on the BitTorrent swarm for that album as long as they are for the film, because the film's 8-10 times the size of the album. There's certainly an issue in there. The other issue is that when we are focused on the most popular content, there is far more music content available worldwide on BitTorrent, on any network, than there is individual film or television titles. Music is there is so much music issued, and there is the interest of an individual is spread much more widely across the different genres of music than they are across the different genres of film. You know, there are 2 or 3 films released every weekend. There are probably 100 music albums released every week, probably more. And so people's interest is spread more thinly, which means as we're focused in that content analysis on music, on the most popular files, music is actually less likely to kind of hit those heights for each individual album. Having said all that, I think there is a truth to the fact that music is far more advanced in legitimate delivery mechanisms than any other system. That they were the first to be affected by this. We go all the way back to Napster. And they've had a much, much longer time to be able to work out and ensure that their delivery systems are mature, are good, are sleek, are simple. It still took them an awful long time to get there. But now if you look at something like Spotify, which I keep coming back to, right, it's got almost everything on. Now, I remember using Spotify 2 or 3 years ago and searching for people who were even a little niche, like Sufjan Stevens or someone like Regina Spektor. They weren't there. You could find the most regular pop albums, but something slightly odd like that wasn't coming up at all. You go into Spotify now, they have everything. There's a band from the 1980s that I used to be really into when I was younger, and I have never, ever seen them anywhere online. They were called the Band of Holy Joy, and I used to go down to London to watch them whenever they played. Fantastic, but no one else ever thought so. They're on Spotify. I can find them on Spotify and stream stuff from them from 1986 or something. And that's incredible, because I couldn't find that music illegitimately. I remember going, you know, looking on music trackers like Oink and Waffles, which will mean something if people are heavy music users. And when we go to these places, we'd often use, we have a list of music that we kind of test ourselves on to see how much these trackers have, how much these BitTorrent systems or other music services have. And there were always gaps. And the Band of Holy Joy was always one of those gaps. So we've now reached a point where these legitimate systems like Spotify are offering not just a simpler streaming and consumption experience, they're offering an even wider spread of material, the discovery that's involved, the ability to access the content, and the simple spread of material available is far better than it is on an illegitimate experience. But having said all that, you know, the music industry's revenue has halved in the last 10 years or so. You know, this is an industry which has been really badly hit by technology and by the internet. Some of that's their own fault. They could have done a better job when Napster came around, and they could have been hot on this 10 years ago rather than 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
But they're now at a point where I think they've really understood what it is they have to offer and what they can provide to people.